This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on, New York City Union rally blasts Bloomberg and Cuomo attacks.
But first,
the new class war on unions spreads to Ohio. Following Governor Walker's union-busting lead, Ohio governor proposes to nullify public employee unionization rights by taking away impartial arbitration of disputes, the right to strike of non-emergency public employees, and protections against privatization of government jobs.
And despite the demonstration against the governor by over 20,000, it was politics at its worst. Republican leaders rammed the bill through by kicking opposing members of their own party off key committees. We're joined by Joseph Regola, Executive Director of Ohio Association of Public School Employees, AFSCME. Tell us about the state of things now in Ohio.
We're watching carefully the fate of our sisters and brothers in Wisconsin, and obviously we've actually sent people to Wisconsin from Ohio, and they've done the same for us, reciprocated with show of mutual support. But certainly this effort here in Ohio, we think, is representative of a national ideologically driven effort to undermine the middle class and destroy the last effective voice of working families, the American labor movement. Our governor, John Kasich, spent many years out of Congress after he left in the year 2000 as a Fox News commentator, and then made himself fabulously wealthy working for Lehman Brothers on Wall Street, and brought his philosophy of greed home to Ohio. And unfortunately, given the environment we were in last fall, tricked enough Ohioans into voting for him. He didn't achieve a majority of votes and won a very close election. But this is really his agenda. He made it clear before he was elected this was what he would do. But unfortunately, not enough people were paying attention to it. And now, of course, polls show that over two-thirds of Ohioans are opposed to this effort to destroy collective bargaining and public sector unions because they know it's an assault on the middle class. They know it'll drive down wages, benefits, and ultimately will have dramatic impact in their own communities where many of these jobs support local businesses, families, churches, and really hold up the standard of living in many small towns and cities across Ohio.
Joseph Regola, one of the things that we should bring out, I'm not sure all our listeners are aware of, what are the fundamental components of the bill that would really dismantle public worker protections that I understand have existed in Ohio since 1983?
That's right. I had the privilege, actually, of working for my own union and serving inside AFSCME for many years prior to the passage of the bill. And what I have tried to tell our members, many of whom weren't around during those early years before collective bargaining was institutionalized into law in Ohio, is that our people really, for the most part, served as wage slaves in the years prior to the enactment of public sector collective bargaining. And we just have no interest in going back to that environment. But that is exactly where the governor and the Republican majorities are intending to take us. And I don't think we want to make any mistake about it. This is also a bold-faced attack on a key constituency group of the Democratic Party. I mean, they're out to put us out of business so that we can't support progressive candidates in Ohio, and their view is they can lock up political control of this state for a couple of decades if they're successful in this effort. So they're not just out to hurt working families and union members. They're out to really establish a form of dictatorship in this state that will give them control over the lives of working families for many, many years to come.
What is the particular group of workers that you represent, and how do you see this? What are their conditions? What are their pay? And how do you conceive that this will affect them directly?
I'm glad you asked that, because when I testified in front of the Senate committee a week and a half ago, I took a group of my members with me. The members I represent work for the most part in public schools. We have 38,000 members and about 450 locals all over Ohio. Their average earnings put them at the lower end of unionized workers. They're school bus drivers, school custodians, secretaries, food service workers, classroom aides, and the like. I actually think that the Republican majority on the committee were stunned to hear that these folks they characterize as privileged classes of workers, people who they say are making exorbitant salaries and taking home rich pensions when they retire. In fact, people barely holding on. And while my members may be a little unusual in that regard, I just don't know. I know thousands of sanitation workers and teachers and firefighters because I served as president of the AFL-CIO here in Ohio for a number of years. The bottom line is I just don't know these well-off public sector workers. I don't know who they are. I've never met one. You know, we're trying to drive home the point to the public, and I think we're making headway, that our people are just average, everyday working folks who depend on their union to hold on to the slice of the middle class they've won as a result of their hard work. And I just hope that Ohioans continue to respond to that argument and to those realities the way that they have up to this time.
And to pick up on just one part of this bill in terms of privatization, what are your fears with regard to that?
We had a significant fight over the privatization of public services in Ohio in the mid-90s when we had Republican governors in charge and Republican majorities in the legislature here, and we turned those efforts back. But this is a far more concerted effort than it was then. It's all part of this national effort that I talked about earlier, and there is no question in anybody's mind that John Kasich is determined to turn public services in this state over to his Wall Street friends so that they can profit from them. Now, we all know what privatization really represents. It certainly is not a cost savings to taxpayers. What it represents is a shift of money from the public sector into private hands to for-profit companies. And what that really translates into, there's only one way for them to make their money, because they actually charge more for the services they provide. So to make their profit margin, they have to drive down wages and benefits and destroy pensions. And there's no question that Kasich has this at the top of his agenda, and his Wall Street friends are definitely licking their chops waiting to get their hands around a little less than a half a million public sector jobs because they know there's big money to be made.
The issue of the right to strike, which I think there are components of the bill that is virtually criminalized. Am I incorrect or that, or if you could explain where we're at?
You're absolutely right about that. It isn't just that the law says you can't strike. It attaches criminal penalties, including imprisonment and very strong fines if workers are found to be in any kind of concerted job action. And it isn't just that you don't have the right to strike. If workers don't show up on the job, the burden of proof is on them to show that they're not on strike. Otherwise, they can be terminated, fined, and imprisoned. But there are other elements of the bill that are just as nefarious. There's a provision that gives public employers the right to declare a fiscal emergency and trash collective bargaining agreements that are currently in place. In addition to that, it really relegates our unions and the members we represent to a begging process instead of a bargaining process, because employers can go through negotiations, claim their bargaining in good faith, and then if there's no agreement reached, they have the right without constraint or without limitation to implement any kind of provisions that they want to in a collective bargaining agreement. So it really strips effectively workers of any significant voice. It gives employers the right to grant raises to individual workers as they see fit. It completely strips seniority rights. So you can be a 31-year teacher, and if there are layoffs in the school system and somebody's worked next to you for 3 months, that person can be protected while you lose your job.
Please. Joe, I just want to push you on that because, you know, we're subjected to, in New York, a series of ads by some fictitious organization that was constructed to say, hey, come on, what we want is merit. We want teachers. We want people who are good workers. It has nothing to do with the longevity. As a matter of fact, the longer they've worked, the more lackadaisical, relaxed, sluggish, and problematic these workers are. Come on, what are we going to tell these people about what the meaning of seniority is and why that is so important and has nothing to do with a meritocracy, if you will.
It's pathetic, and if it weren't so pathetic, it would be comical to hear people arguing all of a sudden that experience doesn't matter. I don't know what corporate CEO or what business leader, I don't care large or small, would make the straight-faced argument that it doesn't matter how long you've done a job, that it has no bearing on how effective you are. And I just think it's incredibly insulting to workers generally, not just teachers, but all workers, to imply that because people have been around a while, that somehow that doesn't make them a better worker, a more devoted or dedicated worker. I saw an interview the other day from a woman who was named Teacher of the Year in Ohio a couple years ago. And I think folks were surprised to hear the argument she was making. She said that to her, it's unthinkable that any superintendent, school district, any politician would argue that teachers who have spent a lifetime in the classroom aren't at the peak of their skills and knowledge and aren't the best possible teachers for our children. And we're going to continue to make the argument that the whole point here is that service, especially long service, is a strong indicator of devotion and dedication to the welfare of children. And it doesn't matter whether it's a teacher or a firefighter or a school bus driver. I will tell you this. I'd like to see John Kasich lock himself in a school bus going down a highway with 55 junior high school students behind him and see how long he wants to make the argument that experience doesn't matter. And I'd like to see him locked in a classroom just for a week and see how long he could survive. Mm. And I sure would like to see him do what my son-in-law does every day as the president of his firefighter local here in Ohio, which is strap on 90 pounds of turnout gear and go up and down steps, sometimes carrying dead bodies or injured people and rescuing them from buildings or accident scenes. I'd like to see any one of these people do that and then argue that years of service ought not to be rewarded, that it ought not to be respected. And I think it's an insult to every public worker that these people take the position that somehow they want to attach merit as if years of service isn't a strong indicator of how effective people are as public servants.
Now, the Republicans really rammed this through the state Senate, and it looks like it'll go through the Assembly. So what's the strategy from here on in?
We've known they were going to pass a bad bill since the time John Kasich was elected and the Republicans took back the majority in the General Assembly in November. So we've been laying the groundwork, not just for the strong opposition that you see mounted every day at the State House, and not just the thousands and thousands of calls and letters that are pouring in, not just from union members, but from working families and quite a few small business people and community leaders around the state. But we've at the same time been laying the groundwork to challenge the law through the referendum process, and there's no question that's where we'll end up. This question will go in front of Ohio voters on the ballot, most likely this coming November 2011, and Ohioans will have a chance to do what polls right now say roughly 65 to 70% of them want to do, which is turn back this effort to strip workers of their collective voice and the right to earn a decent living.
Well, I would say that perhaps where we go with all this is that there's a resurgence of organized labor. And we'd like to thank you so much, Joseph Rigola, for being with us. He is the executive director of the Ohio Association of Public School Employees, ASME. And now we're going to move very quickly right to our own home base, District Council 37, Locals 375, 154, and 768 and 1549 had a demonstration in City Hall Park to both support Wisconsin and Ohio and Indiana. And wait a minute, they wanted a rail against proposed layoffs by Mayor Bloomberg, despite projections of a multi-billion dollar budget surplus. Let's go right to our own backyard right now.
Hey, hey, ho, ho, city layoffs have to go.
Hey, hey, ho, ho,
we have
a union! Union!
Union!
Union!
We are under attack by the governor, Scott Walker, in Wisconsin, who wants to take away collective bargaining rights. In Missouri, they have the goal to put forward legislation to roll back child labor laws. in Indiana, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. They are also attacking collective bargaining rights, and they're establishing right-to-work legislation efforts. And yet, in 1 month, Governor Scott Walker has done more to bring together the labor movement in this country than anybody recently. Waking a sleeping giant, and if he wants to take us on, we're going to take him on.
Yes!
And you know what, Mike Bloomberg? Do you want to take on the 200,000 organized public employees, the 37,000 members of TWU, the 85,000 teachers that we have in this city, and the thousands of unionized workers in other parts of the public and private sector? Do you want to do that, Mike? Because we will be here, and that's a lot of people. The workers united will never be defeated. Brothers and sisters, I want to introduce at this point the president of Local 100 of the Transit Workers Union, John Samuelson.
I just want to say a few brief words, and I want to start with the governor across the river. Governor Christie said that society is now divided into two classes, public sector workers and everybody else. Governor Christie's wrong about that. Governor Christie's doing the bidding of the corporate interests that support him, but this country is and has been divided into two classes, the rich guys and everybody else that's standing around here today fighting for their jobs. Governor Christie and others, Wisconsin and elsewhere, are trying to pick off public sector workers, and they're trying to divide us. They're trying to divide the folks that we service every day, and they're trying to divide us from the private sector unions, and they're trying to pick us off. If Governor Christie, Governor Walker, Governor Cuomo, if they succeed in knocking down the public sector, right after that, they're going to come after private sector unions. This is the time for us to stand together, stand strong. We won't be defeated. If we allow ourselves to be divided by these divide and conquer scheming governors that are coming forward, then we're all going to fall flat in the end. There'll be no jobs here for anybody, and it'll be a richer, richer class against a poorer working class at the end of it all. Stand together, stand united. 38,000 New York City transit workers are in this fight. We stand together, we can't lose. Thank you.
We run this city. We can shut it down. You push us too far, you think we won't walk. The S-word strike, it's out there. Who got the power?
Yeah.
Who got the power?
Yeah.
Who got the power?
Yeah.
Great pleasure. I'd like to present Behrouz Fathi, President, Local 375.
Mayor Bloomberg has trying to cut the services and lay off thousands of public workers and also reduce the quality of life in New York City. This issue is not the budget issue. As a matter of fact, it's a union busting. It was found out that there are a surplus of $2 billion in 2011. And in spite of that, Mayor Bloomberg wants to lay off thousands of public workers and cut services. It is not the budget issue. It is union busting. We are ready to sit down with the city and negotiate with them. They are not willing to sit with the unions to come up with the proper planning and explore the possibilities to save the problems. These problems which has been created by the wealthiest bankers on Wall Street, which created the economic crisis for the last 2-3 years, we are willing to sit down with them to show them how to save by cutting the private sector consultants. They are robbing off the city and the taxpayers, such as the city time issue that everyone is aware of it. And we are willing to sit down with them to give them the ideas that how to save billions of dollars for the city by taxing the rich and taxing the millionaires and billionaires in the city and the state of New York. Tax equity and not taxing the working people. It is not budget issue. It is union busting. What is disgusting?
Union busting.
What is disgusting?
Union busting.
Also, we are here to support our sisters and brothers, public workers in Wisconsin, Ohio, and Indiana. They are in the front line of this fight. And a lot of discussion has been around that whether it's affecting us in the New York City or not. Of course it does. Everyone is aware that Mayor Bloomberg, just in January, introduced a plan to destroy the civil service system. Why? Because he wants to go back to patronage and privatization of civil service system. What is disgusting? What is disgusting?
Now representing Lillian Roberts from DC 37, the Associate Director, Henry Garrido. Henry.
Say it loud. What's disgusting? What's disgusting? We have a mayor who has claimed to be a financial wizard. He needs to hear from us that his decisions are killing people. They are affecting the lives of our members. They are affecting the lives of our community. And every cut he does in that community is going to have a long effect on that community. So say it again. What's disgusting? What's disgusting? There's something wrong with the city that would rather lay off people who make $10,000, $20,000, $15,000 a year and refuse to tax the rich, people who have made millions and millions of dollars on the back of our community in this city, and they continue to do. There's something wrong with a system that continues to contract out thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs for people who have robbed the city blind. Enough is enough. So let's say it one last time. What's disgusting? What's disgusting?
20 from Councilmember Robert Jackson.
I want to tell you a little story. When I was up in Albany, I was yelling in 20 degrees, snowing, winds blowing 25 miles an hour in front of the governor's mansion, fighting against his proposed education cut. Hundreds of people rallied in front of the governor's mansion trying to fight these cuts for education. The so-called millionaire's tax, which is the personal income tax surcharge on wealthier New Yorkers. We are 22 million people in the New York State family. And as a family, you must look after your brothers and your sisters. So if your brother and your sister needs a hand to pay rent, to feed their family, if you have it as a brother or sister, you give it to them. Yeah. And that's what the personal income tax surcharge is about. I ask you, do you know how much that will bring in for one full year of implementation? $5 billion.
That would solve the budget crisis.
And you're right, that may almost solve the problem. I do think that wealthier New Yorkers should help out the more needy members of our family. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah.
It's going to get hotter and hotter and hotter.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Councilmember Jackson. Yeah. And very soon we're going to move towards a picket line all the way around City Hall. This gathering today is bringing labor together, and not just all the labor within the public sector, but also in the private sector. And we have some participation, and I'd like to introduce Dan Payne, president of Teamsters IBT 202. Thank you.
This attack on labor, attack on working class people, this has been going on for 30 years. Private sector unionization in this country is down to 9%, a little bit under. Moving lower, at one point was over 30% in this country. For those 30 years, they've divided workers, destroyed unions throughout this country, and taken the voice of working people away from them. We do not live in a democracy where workers can freely join unions. And in the United States, I would tell you that workers do not have the right to join unions in this country. It's almost impossible to organize workers in this country. And you can look at the wealth concentrated at the top, started with real wages going down since the 70s because we could not organize workers in the private sector. And now, since they've destroyed the private sector unionization, destroyed the rights of workers, corporations getting wealthier, It is now time, in their eyes, to beat up on the public sector. The one hopeful thing, when I look at Wisconsin, I see hope in people's eyes. We are all standing together. They can take everything they want from us, but they can't take us from each other. If we stand together, if the people of this country finally wake up and realize, I was excited yesterday listening to television, actually talking about the rights of people to join unions in this country. How many times I watch on television, even on Labor Day, and there's not a labor leader standing there? It is time to fight for the rights of workers to join unions. This is not about budgets. This is not about pensions. It's about the rights of free people to organize and join unions of their choice and to collectively bargain their futures. The team SIS Local 202 will stand with you, brothers and sisters. Yeah.
Now representing from DC 37, Local 371, the president, Fay Moore. The workers united will never be defeated. The workers united will never be defeated. The workers united will never be defeated. Brothers and sisters, there is nothing more pathetic than a billionaire that cries broke. For 3 years, $3.5 billion surplus, over 500 layoffs, $5 billion surplus, 200 layoffs. Talking about a new $2 billion he didn't even know he had, and what's in the budget again? Layoffs. This is not about money. This is about us. This is about the working class. This is about our city. This is about civil service. The mayor already told us, those of us in public service, he wants to take away our rights. He already told us he wants to shrink our pensions. He's coming after health care next. He hasn't come to the table to give us the raise that we haven't had in 2 years. He has said who he is. Who are we? We are the labor movement. We do not back down. So, Wisconsin, if you hear us, we know what you're going through because we're going through it right here. And we've got to figure out today what are we going to do about it, because these people are not going to stop. Okay? They're not going to stop. We got to stay in the streets. We have to stay in their face. We are worth it. Those of us that show up in these facilities every day, we deserve all our rights and then some. The workers united will never be defeated. The workers united will never be defeated. The workers united will never be defeated. We will be here when they are gone. Thank you.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.